Hello, this is Sandra Ferguson with the Friday, April 28th, 2017 edition of the News Gazette. And we'll begin on the front page with a piece from the University of Illinois called Engineering a Change in Attitudes. Students' Statue Campaign Comes to Fruition by Deborah Pressey, Urbana. It's taken some time, but Sakshi Srivastava's determination to get a statue honoring women in engineering on the University of Illinois campus is finally paying off. The life-size statue, a gift from Texas Instruments, is scheduled to be unveiled at its home on the east side of the Micro and Nanotechnology Laboratory, 208 North Wright Street, with a ceremony at 2:15 p.m. today. Srivastava, a graduate student in electrical engineering who started working on a campaign to install a female statue as an undergraduate student, will be a speaker at the unveiling ceremony. An international student from Allahabad, India, Srivastava was a junior at the UI when she began her campaign to get a statue on campus to help inspire women going into the male-dominated engineering field. Her efforts included launching an online petition drive and helping draft resolutions that were supported by the Illinois Student Senate and Academic Senate. She made it clear from the start this was never just about adding a female statue counterpart to the male statue, nicknamed Granger Bob, outside the UI's Granger Engineering Library. "I think my hope for the statue is to let women, young women, as well as women still in their engineering program or in the industry, know that they belong in engineering, that we can fulfill our dreams in a changing world in creating better technology," she said. Not just women in the Urbana-Champaign region, not just women in Illinois, but all across the world, that you should believe in your dreams, that Illinois supports your dream. The statue, which has been named the Quintessential Engineer, is the work of Chicago sculptor Julie Rotblat Amrani. The statue's face has an expression of wonder, exploration, and knowledge, one of curiosity and perseverance, she said. She represents a multiracial female, a young professional woman at work, always thinking on the move. Rothblatt Armani said she used the hexagon shape in the granite base as a repeated form in the natural world. "It is precision engineering in nature, similar to our DNA, honeycombs, snowflakes, bubble rafts, carbon, etc.," she said. "The shapes are turning and morphing into circuit boards, next into books, then into folds of her pants. She holds an iPad, manipulating a flexible screen of the future. The image is one of waves. It could be sound waves, water waves, light waves, and wave particles, interstellar communication, radar satellite. It's up to the viewer's imagination." Rotblat Amrani has designed many other well-known statues, among them Michael Jordan with her husband Omri Amrani and Scottie Pippen, both housed at the United Center in Chicago, and a bas-relief bronze of Abraham Lincoln at the Lincoln Presidential Library in Springfield. Women continue to remain a minority at engineering schools and in the engineering workforce. According to the Society of Women Engineers, more than 20% of the engineering school graduates are women, but only 11% of practicing engineers are female. Plus, 30% of women who leave the profession give workplace climate as their reason. At the UI, close to 20% of engineering graduate students are women, according to U.S. News & World Report's quick stats on best engineering schools. Illinois engineering spokesman Bill Bell said the UI's Women in Engineering program offers several visit opportunities for students considering engineering at Illinois and camps for girls in junior high and high school. It also offers programming for students once they're enrolled to help them succeed. That's been critical to the growth in the number of women in the class, he said. The new statue at the UI celebrates female engineers and their contributions to bettering the world through engineering, said UI College of Engineering Dean Andreas Kangelaris. For the past several years, engineering at Illinois has worked hard to increase the diversity of both our students and faculty, especially the number of women who choose engineering as their profession, he said. We very much appreciate this gift from Texas Instruments as it reflects their interest and support for these efforts. Srivastava, who hopes to finish her master's degree in December, then start work on her doctorate, said she knows many women still tend to see engineering as a man's profession. She hopes they'll see the statue and think again, that people will see a role model in her, she said. And our next piece comes from Campus Town. It's last day for Zorba's owner. Eatery will be in new hands on Saturday. By Ben Zichterman, Champagne. For the first time in nearly 35 years, Matt Mortensen doesn't know what he'll be doing next week. The longtime Zorba's owner sold the Campus Town Institution to Alex and Eleni Anastasiadis, and Mortensen's last day is today. The Anastasiadis' takeover on Saturday. They're planning on keeping things the same. They'll do as they see fit, going down the road, but they want to keep it the same, Mortensen said Thursday. Two of my daughters who work here will stay a little while to help them. Mortensen, 60, sold Zorba's because he wants to start a new chapter in his life, but he doesn't have anything lined up at the moment. Next week I'll be working on my resume and start applying for jobs, he said. Hopefully I'll take a few days and get a little vacation in, a little chance to relax, but I'm obviously kind of a workaholic. Zorba's, at 627 East Green Street, opened in 1973, and Mortensen has worked there since 1982. He bought it in 1997. It's a little weird after getting up every day and coming here and this being my little place, he said. It was always more a home away from home, in a sense. I spent so much time here. A lot has changed in Campus Town since he became a restaurant owner. When I bought it in 97, there was probably 6 or 7 restaurants on this 600 block, he said. There's at least 17 now. And campus isn't as busy during football season, though Mortensen is hopeful Lovey Smith will help turn that around. The crazy football Saturdays were a lot of fun, he said. Mortensen also misses the weekly jazz nights that he couldn't get going again after Zorba's closed for a year following a March 2011 fire. When it finally did reopen, though, Mortensen was blown away by his customers' response. My daughter and I worked 21 days straight of 17-hour days. I've never seen a place that busy in my life, he said. People waited an hour to get something to eat. I sliced 4,000 pounds of meat in the first 16 days we were reopened. That's 2 tons. Mortensen said he has been blessed with plenty of regulars and has stayed in touch with a lot of the people he has hired over the years. I've gotten a lot of hugs this week, which is really nice, he said. They like Zorba's, but they've gotten really attached to my family, being here for so many years. And next, a spotlight on college grads, part 3 in a series, called Almost Failing Helped Him Learn, and Soon He'll Teach Others, by Noelle McGee Charleston. One of the most valuable lessons soon-to-be high school chemistry teacher Nathan Gayhart learned at college didn't come from a textbook, lecture, or a chemistry experiment. It came from almost failing a class. A couple of years ago, the Eastern Illinois University student took Calculus 1, a required course for his chemistry with teacher certification major. Though he had always been good at math, he struggled in the class and barely got a D. That was due to my effort, recalled Gayhart, now 22. Instead of switching majors, Gayheart retook the course the next semester and brought his grade up to a C. When he took Calculus 2 the next year, he was determined to bring it up even more. "I studied for 3 hours a night every night and got a high B. It just shows you have to keep practicing and never give up," he said. "That shows a lot of perseverance and willingness to buckle down in the face of adversity," said Dan Sheeran, an associate professor of chemistry and Gayheart's academic advisor. As a student, being able to relate that to his students can be really effective in motivating them in their academic endeavors. On May 6th, Gayheart will graduate from Eastern, where he was a Golden Apple Scholar, a leader in his fraternity and the university's Greek system, worked in the intramural sports program, and found time to volunteer in the Charleston area. Gayheart is the son of Terry Gayheart and Nicole Faulkner, both of Penfield. His family moved from Georgetown to the small northeastern Champaign County community with just under 200 residents when he was in the first grade. Gayheart attended Gifford Elementary and Armstrong High School, where he played football and basketball. He decided to pursue a career in education on the advice of two of his teachers and coaches, Aaron Sester and Brian Russell. "They were both very enthusiastic, and they brought out the best in me," Gayheart said. "I was always pretty good at chemistry, so I went that route," he continued. "They call it the central science, and you have to know a little bit about everything. Chemistry, physical science, biology, math, technology. It's also challenging, and it still challenges me today." Through the Golden Apple Scholar Program, Gayheart developed leadership skills and got hands-on teaching experience instructing incoming 8th and 9th graders at the Fred Rogers Magnet Academy in Aurora for a few weeks for 2 summers. He also taught a university foundation course for 2 years. Sheeran said students who are on academic probation are required to take the course, which aims to help them improve their critical thinking and communication skills and study habits and help them make the most of their time on campus. During his freshman year, Gayheart pledged Phi Kappa Theta, where he also took on leadership responsibilities. He served as president of the fraternity and received the Captain's Award for Leadership, and also served as president of Eastern's Interfraternity Council. Gayheart also worked at the Student Recreation Center. "He was responsible, he dealt with students well, and he wasn't afraid of hard work," the intramural sports director, Kevin Linker, who promoted Gayheart to team sports supervisor for basketball and flag football after 2 years of serving as an official. "When he wasn't studying or working, he volunteered with the Douglas Heart Nature Center and the Salvation Army after-school program." This past semester, Gayheart student taught chemistry, physics, and physical science at Cumberland High School in Greenup. This summer, he's working for his dad's construction company and preparing to move to Galesburg with girlfriend Caitlin Wagner, who is also graduating from Eastern in May. He's eager to start his job as a chemistry and physical science teacher at the local public high school in August and hopes to coach one day. "My goal is to get them college and career ready when they leave," Gayheart said. "Even if they don't go into science, I want them to develop the skills they need in those higher level classes that they can use in college or their career." And we'll turn now to the opinions page and begin with an editorial called "Rewriting the Tax Code. President Trump is putting another hot potato on the plate of Congress." Many of the details have yet to be resolved, but President Donald Trump on Wednesday kicked off what's expected to be a spirited, even acrimonious, debate on the federal income tax code and what needs to be done to make it both less complicated and more growth-oriented. Showing just how much is open to negotiation, the Trump administration released a one-page outline that set out a general framework for the plan, but little else. Under the proposal, the 7 existing tax brackets would be reduced to 3, 10, 25, and 35%, with the income levels where they would take effect unspecified. The plan also calls for eliminating most deductions, with the exception of home ownership, retirement savings, and charitable giving, ending the estate tax and doing away with the alternative minimum tax. As an additional means of encouraging even more taxpayers to take the standard deduction rather than itemizing, the plan calls for doubling the deduction for married couples from $12,600 to $24,000. At the same time, the plan calls for reducing the corporate income tax from 35% to 15% and encouraging corporations to bring cash they have overseas back to the United States for investments. Those provisions, of course, barely scratch the surface of the proposed tax plan. No matter how much people talk of tax simplification, the indisputable fact is that the federal income tax code has been, is now, and always will be complicated. However, it doesn't have to be as complicated and cumbersome as it is. It doesn't have to discourage private investment by maintaining a corporate tax code far out of step with those of other nations. Democrats, of course, can be expected to line up in opposition to the proposal. Even before he saw the administration outline, U.S. Senator Charles Schumer, the Democratic minority leader, denounced the proposal as a tax giveaway to the very, very wealthy that will explode the deficit. In one respect, Schumer could ultimately be proved correct. The public will just have to wait for the numbers to come in to know what impact the administration plan will have on federal revenue. Budget deficits, like those that dominated President Barack Obama's 8 years in office, are a huge problem. At the same time, Schumer is wrong in another respect. He talks about the government giving away tax money as if the government had actually earned the money itself. Individuals and companies pay income taxes based on the money they earn. If they don't earn it first, the government can't tax it later. The federal government isn't giving people anything when it lets them keep more of the money they earn. It has been more than 30 years since the last major reform of the federal tax code, one negotiated by congressional Democrats and Republicans and signed into law by President Ronald Reagan. That model of bipartisan decision-making to solve what members of both political parties saw as a problem is unlikely to be on a display again. Too bad. Both Democrats and Republicans know there are problems with the current tax code. Why not get together and hammer out a solution that both sides can live with and serve the public interest? One especially controversial aspect of the plan involves the deduction of state and local taxes, something that is especially advantageous to well-off residents in high-tax states like New York and California. Under the current proposal, that deduction would be eliminated. Although it would be made up, at least in part, by doubling the exemption for married couples to $24,000, look for legislators in the affected states to raise a ruckus. The proposal not only would eliminate the deduction for well-off taxpayers, but it would serve as another disincentive for many states, including Illinois, to raise their state income tax rates. The legislative process, if pursued correctly, is a long journey. This one will be especially so because it begins with a formula, not even a legislative proposal. Much will be said and written about it in the coming weeks, but until the details start to be filled in, commentary on both sides of the debate will be more speculative than substantive. And now in the From Our Readers section, we'll begin with a piece written by Cynthia McKendall of Champaign called March for Science International Event. Last weekend was a big one for Champaign-Urbana. The Illinois Marathon was a great event, as usual, and we honored one of our native sons with Ebertfest at the Virginia Theater. Both events were well covered in the News Gazette's pages. There was also a March for Science in Champaign on Saturday. However, you would have known little about the March for Science by reading this newspaper. There were hundreds of sister marches around the world the same weekend, which were covered in newspapers like the Chicago Tribune, the Pentagraph, and Bloomington Normal. The Daily Illini put the local march on their front page, reporting that around 5,000 people attended. Obviously, it was a big event. This newspaper had a photo on Sunday's page B3 and an AP story about the march on page 3 of the Monday edition. I'm disappointed in the News Gazette. And that again was by Cynthia McKendall of Champaign. The next piece is written by Bill Denny of Urbana, and it's called Close-Minded About God of All. I would like to respond to Michael McCullough's letter printed April 4th. When a human secularist, atheist, such as McCullough, dies, the coroner should open his skull to 1. See if there is a brain, 2. See if it was attached properly, and 3. Look for deformity and damage to the brain tissue. Atheists have got to be some of the most bone-headed people who have ever walked upright since the creation of Adam and Eve. How can anyone not believe there is a God? The answer is, of course, found in the Bible. Revelation chapter 12, verse 9. And the great dragon was thrown down, that ancient serpent, who is called the devil and Satan, the deceiver of the whole world. He was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him. 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 3 through 4. And even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled only to those who are perishing. In their case, the God of this world has blinded the minds of the unbelievers to keep them from seeing the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. Anyone who rejects the triune God is blinded and deceived by Satan. This is not a game. It is not about who has temporary power over our nation. This is about whether you will spend eternity with God or separated from Him. And that again was written by Bill Denny of Urbana. And the next piece is written by Glenn Myers of Atwood, and it's called Lyme Disease Often is Misdiagnosed. Borreliosis, better known as Lyme disease, is spread by the bite of a tick, which can be as small as the period at the end of the sentence. May is Lyme Awareness Month. Borreliosis is the greatest vector-borne disease, with over 300,000 new cases in the U.S. each year. It is now in epidemic proportions in the U.S. and reported in 49 of our 50 states, and is as serious worldwide. Current testing is unreliable, and only approximately 50% of cases include the classic bullseye rash. Most doctors in this area, unfortunately, are not properly trained to recognize or treat Lyme. Lyme is called the great imitator, as it can be confused and misdiagnosed as arthritis, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, as well as other diseases, even Alzheimer's. You know your body better than anyone, and when you feel the diagnosis may be incorrect, keep looking until you find someone who will listen to you and will consider all the various symptoms. This is what I had to do. Ticks are most active May through October at temperatures above 70 degrees, but may be found throughout the year. Ticks can be found just about anywhere, as migrating birds can bring them into your yard. Wear repellents specifically for ticks, along with proper clothing. Long-sleeve shirts, pants tucked into socks, shoes, and a hat. Learn how to properly remove ticks, should you find one. More information may be found at www.lyme-disease.org or www.ilads.org. And that again was written by Glenn Myers of Atwood. And now in the history section, in area history, in 1917, Boy Scouts joined women of Champaign-Urbana in doing their part for the war effort, making comfort bags in the Red Cross workshop at the Lincoln Building on Main Street. Each soldier leaving Champaign-Urbana would carry one of the kits. They carried articles not furnished by the government and went far toward making Army life more enjoyable. In 1967, Patsy Parker, a junior from Glenview, was elected University of Illinois Student Body President, becoming the first woman to be elected to the position in the 100-year history of the university. Parker defeated Craig Greenwood of Downers Grove. And in 2002, plant biologists at the UIs were studying whether the use of tall grass called miscanthus could be used to provide energy for U.S. consumers. And in international history, today's highlight, on April 28, 1967, heavyweight boxing champion Muhammad Ali was stripped of his title after he refused to be inducted into the armed forces. On this date in 1789, there was a mutiny on the HMS Bounty as rebelling crew members of the British ship, led by Fletcher Christian, set the captain, William Bligh, and 18 others adrift in a launch in the South Pacific. Bligh and most of the men with him reached Timor in 47 days. And next, in Top of the Morning, something to get you going today, courtesy staff writer Bob Asmussen. Donna Pepper's one-week boutique is still going strong. The twice-a-year children's clothing consignment sale, now in its 15th year, is scheduled for this weekend at Champaign's Leonard Recreation Center. It opens at 10 a.m. Saturday. But the Illinois graduate admits part of her attention is on the Green Bay Packers, particularly the team's rookie long snapper, her son, Tabor. Donna, her husband Cam, a former Illini offensive lineman, and the family helped Tabor move into the Packers facility in Green Bay on April 18th. The Peppers went on a tour of Lambeau Field. "We did a little shopping in the pro shop," said Pepper, while wearing a Packers hat and sweatshirt. "It's saving me a lot of money because Packers green is the same color as Michigan State green." Tabor Pepper played for the Spartans. Tabor Pepper signed a 3-year contract with the Packers during the offseason. Brett Good, Green Bay's long snapper from 2008 to 2016, is no longer with the team. Pepper and rookie Derek Hart are the only long snappers on the roster. The Packers set up Tabor Pepper in a local hotel for 59 days. He works out with the team and is paid $215 each day. He will be given a full salary if he makes the final roster. And we'll take a short break now and then return with the second half hour of the Friday, April 28th, 2017 edition of the News Gazette. I'm Sandra Ferguson. Please stay tuned.